Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Daria.
Talking to me?
Hello and welcome to Arya Talking to Me, a Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon podcast. My name's Ben Vanel, I'm a comedian, I live in Melbourne, and his name, the guy I'm looking at, who you can't see but you're about to hear from momentarily, is Adam Knox.
I hope you can't see me. Maybe you're listening to this in public and I'm on the same tram as you, or I'm walking nearby, or you've crept into my house. Whatever it is, come say hi. If you're in my house, come say hello. Right. Alert yourself to the local authorities. Let them know that you're in my house and then come say hi.
Yeah. And then we can talk about Game of Thrones or House of the Dragon.
The local authorities, by the way, are my left fist and my right fist.
Wow. So they got to alert themselves to your fists.
Yeah. And then I'll just run through whatever attacks they throw at me completely without any trouble at all. I'll do a stupid, pointless fucking plan of pretending to surrender for no reason, just for theatrics, I think, just to be a bit dramatic about it.
Sure. I mean, not everything has to be logical. Sometimes you just need a bit of showbiz, a bit of jazz hands, baby.
Hit him with the old razzle dazzle. Razzle being the name of the left fist, dazzle being the name of the right. And you think those names don't apply to threatening fists? Then you'll have to speak to razzle dazzle.
They're ironic nicknames, like Bluey for a redhead.
Yeah, you'll be treading the boards with your cheeks after I knock your face down onto them boards.
Wow. It sounds like you want to maybe knock the directors of this episode or the writers of this episode down onto the ground with Razzle and Dazzle.
95% of it, not at all. Yeah, but we'll get to the end.
Yeah. But episode 3, it just, I guess, aired, I assume. That's why it went up on Australian pay TV services at 11 a.m. I assume that roughly coincides with the live airing in the States.
Yeah.
But we both watched, episode 3, Second of His Name is the title of this episode, for obvious reasons, if you've seen it. One thing I wanted to address before we dive straight into the recap and also some emails from wonderful listeners is the news that Miguel Sapochnik has resigned from House of the Dragon. He basically worked hand in hand with Ryan J. Condal and George R. R. Martin on developing the show. He directed the premiere, and he's decided to step away. He feels like he's put in, the work to get the show ready, and now that it's sort of... I assume he's seen a lot of the episodes that have been filmed and stuff. He must feel comfortable enough to be like, I don't want this to be my full-time job for the rest of, the show's run.
I would imagine, too, that it was sort of going into it like an understanding that would be what... It reminds me of, how when The Walking Dead started, they were like, oh, it's Frank Darabont doing it. Frank Darabont's the guy. It's Frank Darabont.
Right.
And then it was like, by the way, the first episode is the only thing he's ever going to fucking have anything to do with. And then that show's gone from strength to strength. So,
well, my classic new American cinema auteur example is Martin Scorsese sort of had that attachment to Boardwalk Empire. He executive produced it. He directed the premiere. And gave it a big, dose of Scorsese flavor, and they did manage to carry that through to the end, which gives me hope.
Yeah, I don't think that this news is particularly bothersome, seeing as it's such a established tone and world and everything already that that showrunner Bible thing is so must be thick as hell at this point. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I, he was a good person to have come in and sort of set it up because they had experience with the previous series, but it doesn't ring any alarm bells for this guy.
No, and like the first three episodes that we've seen so far have all been written by Ryan Condal. This third one was co-written by Ryan Condal and Gabe Fonseca, but he has, obviously has a huge voice in this show, and he's still the showrunner. And they did bring on another person. I don't know if he's like a showrunner or just like another senior producer. This guy, Alan Taylor, who he's a director of TV, he's a writer. He directed the premiere of Mad Men.
Right.
And he's worked on... Oh, he directed Many Saints of Newark as well, which you just watched. But yeah, he's directed on like Sopranos, Game of Thrones, Boardwalk Empire, 6 Feet Under, Lost, The West Wing. Super, super experienced TV guy.
Yeah.
And yeah, has literally worked on Game of Thrones as well. So has that, that experience. Yeah. Whatever. The fact that no one seemed to really respond to this with too much concern makes me... not concerned.
Yeah. It's a pretty, like, other than obviously George R. R. Martin in some capacity, I would say that this is a pretty traditional type of TV show where whoever's kind of in charge of it knows what they're expected to do. You know, like, it doesn't really matter if it's changing hands every now and again. Probably in, like, obviously that will always impact things, but it's not worrisome.
You're right. The auteur for the show is George Martin. It's not the director or the EP.
And so, having a Mad Men guy come in could be great. Starting going, you're not selling people dragons. The dragon isn't about the fire. It's about...
It's not immoral that I'm fucking someone while I'm married because that's just politics, baby.
Yeah, that's just that how classic you... Mad Men line. That's just politics, baby.
No, that was the Game of Thrones part.
Oh, that classic Game of Thrones line. That's just politics, baby.
I believe that's what Viserys says in this episode, doesn't he?
There is a politics baby here in
very true.
In Aegon.
But yes, before we jump on into Second of His Name, let's get through some emails. Wonderful email here from Devon. You can email us, of course, at ariatalkingtomepod@gmail.com. You can also just message the Facebook page or the Instagram. I bet you can guess what they're called. Wonderful little email here from Devon saying lots of nice things at the start and asking us if we think House of the Dragon will ever be good enough to reach the level of popularity that Game of Thrones got to. Seems to be headed in the right direction, Devon says. Obviously, diehard fans will love it, but he wonders if it will become a cultural phenomenon like Game of Thrones. For example, and this bit he's written in a different font, so I assume he's come back here with like walked away.
A keyboard ran out of ink. And then he maybe, had to come back with a second keyboard.
Maybe. I thought it was more like, you know, the artist, you know, he finishes, you know, his work for the day. He walks off and then he has a brainwave and he comes back and he adds another brush stroke.
Right.
But yeah, Devon says, Better Call Saul's probably the best spin-off show ever, but it never reached the level of hype that Breaking Bad received every week, which is 100% true. Yeah. And can House of the Dragon do it?
There's an argument that Better Call Saul surpassed the level of quality of Breaking Bad in some ways too, but...
I think that argument would be made by both you and I.
In some ways, for sure. Like, they both have their strengths, but like, there's no way to repeat a cultural moment like that, especially when by nature of doing a sequel or a prequel that you're going to be drawing on... not nostalgia, but people's appreciation for the thing that you are doing the second version of. So, like, you can't have it be, you know, a new thing in the same way. Not that everything that becomes a cultural phenomenon is new. Like, sex existed before 50 Shades of Grey, but just there's a... If a fucking shit-ass Tonight Show host can't make a joke about it, then it's not going to become a cultural phenomenon.
Right. I think that... unlike Breaking Bad, Game of Thrones ended with disappointment for most fans.
Right.
But, just in terms of our opinion of the shows, I think that what could become the case is that fans could look back on House of the Dragon after it's done and be like, oh, well, that had a better level of quality all the way through, you know, rather than Game of Thrones. I could see that happening,
for
potentially.
Sure. It could end up better, but it won't end up bigger.
Exactly. Yeah, it won't end up bigger. I don't think anything will ever be as big.
Always the angel, so never the Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
We got a great question here from Barbara, or it's more of a an observation. Babs says, hey mates, exciting to see the pod back in my feed. First episode had one thing that I can't get out of my mind. The two girls were laying next to a weirwood tree. That's the red leaves, mm-hmm. face from the north. I believe it appeared in this episode again, episode 3, which is supposed to have all the tree wizard magic that Bran gets.
Yeah.
Going into episode 3, I can't see this happening, but do you think the show has the guts to double down on King Bran? Like, the old tree wizard has been watching and planting seeds of dreams into the king's mind to freak them out about the Song of Ice and Fire. So I guess more sort of magical portents and prophecies and the entire, that, you know, time travel-y loop sort of thing.
I mean, I would fucking love that. If they did the thing that Better Call Saul, spoilers for Better Call Saul, has done,
right.
where it's kind of been like a mini sequel to Breaking Bad as well as being a prequel. If they jump forward and were like, and Bran was behind it all, ha 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 ha, which is the only way that any of that story makes any fucking sense, then, or not Bran, but like the whatever he was called, the
Three-Eyed Raven,
the
Crow
Boy, yeah. So if he's, sure, good noticing. I mean, it is also the thing that is like in the middle of all of those kind of regal areas. I believe there was one in Winterfell too, and it's like very much a theme in the show for characters to be relaxing there, especially the like outcast royal character. So I think there's that connecting tissue too. But yeah,
right,
cool idea, cool thought.
Yeah, yes. I mean, you're right. I think that thematically in the show, the tree represents a character grappling with maybe thoughts that are contrary to, like, you know, the prevailing narrative, you know? Like, obviously in Rhaenyra, I think in episode 3, that's what it represents. Bran, his whole thing is like, no, I'm going to do this thing which seems crazy and follow that path. So I think that's what it symbolizes, but also they probably know that people will have observed it, and maybe there is some sort of actual like plot implication. Will be interesting to see if that plays out. Thanks, Barbara. What else have we got here? Ian made the observation that so the intro sequence that we got from episode 2 onwards is the model that Viserys made of Valyria. And then, the River of Blood is the Targaryen bloodline, and then there's, like, all the people, rather than all the different locations that we got in Game of Thrones. It's, like, all the, ancestors and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, there were some other changes that we noticed in terms of location that Ian reckons is, a byproduct of having a massive budget to start this show. The more blades, the bigger Iron Throne. It's just more representative of what is in the book, and they're able to do it now.
Right.
And like the place where the big council was happening in the prologue, where Viserys gets chosen over his cousin, was Harrenhal. And Ian reckons that's literally like the hall where Tywin was having his small council with Arya as the wine girl. So like obviously the scale is completely.
Right.
Completely, you know, multiplied by 1,000.
And I guess by that point, it's also been blown up a little from the war that's going on, right? Like, by the time they're in Harrenhal and Game of Thrones, it's all smashed up.
Yep.
I like the idea that sometime in between House of the Dragon and Game of Thrones, somebody's like, should we take away a few of these swords? This is fucking dangerous. One of the old kings cut himself on it.
It's ostentatious.
Yeah.
You know, it's... We don't. Let's have a bit of bloody, bloody modesty about the place.
Oh, that guy, he lost a cut. His fingers went all black and fell off because he cut them on it. And like some people said, it was representative of parentship, but fucking whatever. It's sharp, is why.
It's just a hazard. I don't know if you read Ian's email, but you've preempted his last point. Another thing with the king hurting his with the king hurting his finger on the throne and claiming his back wound was from another wound from the throne. It's a common belief, I guess, amongst people who've read the books or people who dig into the lore of the show that the throne will reject those it deems unworthy of the crown. So this is an implication that Viserys, like we already think, you know, from the actual text of the show, is probably not king material.
Yeah, I think we said that about not necessarily with it being like the throne having autonomy, but about like that's obvious, that's what the show is saying with the cut.
Yes. Yeah. And then just another nice email from a guy called Paul who says he re-listened to the whole podcast twice since Game of Thrones finished. So you must really know our opinions well. I don't know if that means you know the show better. And he's only watching House of the Dragon so he can keep up with this podcast, which is very nice to hear. He lives in Wimbledon, so I assume he plays tennis.
He gets fucking knocked about by tennis balls once a year for a month. Yeah, if you live inside Wimbledon, you're getting fucking...
I wonder, he's like, his bed's just, you know, center court.
Yeah.
No good.
I'm sick of
no
eating strawberries! I've got to move.
He misses your impression of Jorah. But, you know, there's no Jorah in this show.
No, there's no... I'll try and work on a Matt Smith. I need to...
Oh!
Hey there, everybody. It's me, Matt Smith. I got this weirdly weak voice for the strong characters they try to get me to play.
He is best at that character when he doesn't talk. He has the look down pat. He has the, like, mean look. Come out, crab man.
Where are you, crab? Come face me, crab man.
But yeah, those are our emails. Thanks for those. Thanks to everyone who sent those in. They came through, mid episodes. Any reflections on this episode we just watched this week, please send them through. Any predictions, any thoughts, as long as they're not book spoilers, please send them in to the places I said before. But now it's time to dig into Season 1, Episode 3, Second of His Name.
Yeah, and we open up with a big sort of battle scene with the Crab Man and the Crab Army versus pretty much just Daemon on his very long, wiggly dragon.
Yeah, I'm sure we've noticed this before, but they're the kind of dragon that doesn't have arms. They're like bats.
Right.
They only have wings. They wiggle around. Their legs, like that one, yeah, I noticed that too. Legs are a bit flippy floppy and have sort of winged, webbed bits in them as well. They're like a flying worm, which is often said about dragons. You know, they're a worm.
The worm with the Y.
That's right.
The worm with the Y, the wang, diggy, diggy. So.
My name is Dave!
Castellan Rock!
Yes.
He's fucking up a bunch of the crabmen, but
he steps on one of his own soldiers. That was at the start, right?
Yeah. One of his own soldiers, who, to be fair, is fucking dead anyway. Like,
yeah, yes, he was being crucified.
I'm not certain
by Mr. Crab himself.
Right. I'm not certain he could have even heard that man down there shouting out for help. Like, I don't think but he is kind of recklessly coming in and just charging and barging and trying to. Fuck the place up and looking for the Crab King, the Crab Feeder.
Yeah, he's not the Crab King, but he's just a guy called Crab Feeder.
He's just some guy with a mask and some sort of skin condition, but gets a few arrows and flies off, and it sort of sets up that maybe they're not as easily winning as you might expect a team with a dragon to be.
That's right. And then it's revealed that this is taking place 2 years later. I actually don't know if that scene with the dragon does, but I guess we're meant to assume that it does. It's birthday, right? That's the first scene. It's the second name day of Viserys and Alicent's son, Aegon.
Aegon is two, so it's been about 3 years, including pregnancy.
Yes, of course.
Which I often forget about too, because it's the easiest thing in the world and the least important job that a woman can do.
That's right.
they're having these celebrations with the little baby Aegon and Otto and some other snivelly guy who I wasn't quite sure who he was, but he seems to be maybe Otto's brother, I think.
Is he the master of coin? Is that who he is?
Or master of laws? Is he the? They mentioned a master of laws at some point, but I just didn't quite remember this dude showing up before, and he seems to have some investment personally in Aegon too, so I assumed he was related to Otto in another Hightower or something.
Right. I think he was on the small council.
Right.
So I do think we've seen him before. I think that the guy who we saw last week giving his honest opinion that Viserys should marry the child, I think that might be the Master of Laws.
I think I remembered him as Master of Coins, so I might have them backwards.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, maybe. No, I don't know. God, if there was only just like a page that had their photos next to them.
We need like a fake sort of local government page, yeah. Where you can see who everyone is and look at their most recent tax returns. But yeah, they're all kind of just fawning over this baby whose second name day is coming up. They're all telling him, oh, he's got your eyes and your little cheeks and your hair and he looks like you. And so,
yes,
and then we meet, I believe, our first Lannister of the show.
Yeah, this was exciting.
Yeah,
I don't know how you felt, but it felt like a cameo almost. But Jason, is it Jason Lannister?
We meet Tyland first, who's the twin of Jason.
Right.
And he's yet another guy trying to tell Viserys, like, please fucking take this stepstone shit seriously. Everything's gone wrong.
That's
up
right.
There, and it's super important to the realm. And he's yet again a little bit blowy-offy about it, because I don't know if he mentions it at this point, but we learn throughout the episode that his main reason for not really wanting to get involved is because if they sort of swoop in and save Daemon and like these sort of dissenty kind of people,
mm-hmm.
it'll make it seem like they have a little bit of sway over what the king decides to do. Seeing as they went off and did this on their own, they should be left to deal with it on their own, is his sort of position.
I think that's what, I do think we get that at the start. I think maybe Otto even says it, of like,
yeah.
You know, they did this against the wishes of the king without the king's leave or say so.
Exactly, yes.
To make it look as if Daemon essentially has power over the king.
Yep. I'm reading Otto saying that in subtitles right now. Also, Alicent
Otto
is pregnant with
Otto
a second
might be
one.
The most... Oh, yes, yeah.
Yeah.
We don't know if this is a boy or a girl, but she's up the duff once again.
She's reduffed. Double duff.
I was saying Otto is like the most successful of the political manipulators so far.
Absolutely.
He's absolutely got his family tied to the king and like literally has pulled off all of his schemes, which means that he'll never have any comeuppance in this show, because,
right.
You know, that's not how Game of Thrones works.
I mean, he is the most, he's flown under the radar pretty well too, it seems like, in terms of
right.
kings knowing someone's being shifty under their watch.
Mm-hmm.
Viserys doesn't seem to really think that he's out to be gotten by Otto.
Not at all. Not at all. Yep.
But so we catch up that it's been yet another time jump. And
mm-hmm.
There's a little lute-playing bard underneath a tree who I bet is wishing time would jump it forward to when he doesn't have to play the same song again and again for a studying teenager, which, by the way,
yep.
very accurate. I would find a song I liked and just put it on loop.
100%. I have a younger sister. I was driven insane by the same Aqua song being played over and over again.
Aqua's an interesting choice. It's no The Dragon something something, but Thingo is out here. Rihanna is out here reading a book instead of participating with this hunt that everyone's sort of getting ready to go on for the second
right.
day of Little Aegon.
Yep.
And
yep.
Alicent comes out and starts flexing a bit of queen muscle at her.
Oh, yeah. There's a Mexican standoff of like, keep playing the song. No, no, stop playing the song. Well, I'm the princess. Well, I'm the queen and I get to say so over the playlist.
Right.
Give me the aux cord. I have the right. a little bit of power play going on. It doesn't seem like she's loving it, Alicent.
No.
Like, she seems to genuinely be... quite uncomfortable at what's happened to their friendship.
She has the same face on that she had in the couple of scenes we got with her and just her dad in the last couple of episodes, where she will grit her teeth through things that she sees as her duty. So, and that's how she's just kind of acting all of the time now.
Yeah,
she doesn't have that looseness or that sort of, I don't want to say like humanity, but like interpersonal kind of connection with anybody. And the only person she had it with was Rhaenyra, but like she's lost that. She's completely accepted that she has to be this queen, and you can see that she's just putting on a brave face, but she's putting it on.
Yeah, yeah.
Including when she's getting bumped around in this carriage as, you know, she convinces the Rhaenyra to come with them to this thing, and they're all heading off in a carriage, and Rhaenyra, oi, oh, these teens, they talk back to you all the time.
She's so moody. It's like fucking, yeah, your mum died and you've been replaced by your best friend who's also kind of your mum and you and has given birth to also your other replacement. But like fucking, hey, you get to ride in a carriage.
Yeah,
that's
come
pretty
on.
Fun.
Enough of the back talk, please.
Yeah. Do you want me to turn this carriage around?
I got genuinely like regressing into my past frightened when he was like, what was that? And she said the thing again. I was like, don't do that. You can fucking throw it out of the carriage. What are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah.
But
she did. And there's a bit of talk about pregnancy, right? There's a bit of like, oh, you know, it's the days are long, but hey, you'll give the birth was real easy. It's like, right. Oh, was it for you?
Yeah.
Because it wasn't so easy for someone I used to know called my mum.
Exactly. I wish I'd have found out her real name before she died, but I can't now. Yeah, there's a lot of, for a lot of this episode, it's her, Rhaenyra and her dad clashing about what, you know, whether or not she's fulfilling her duties, one of which, and the main one of which for, you know, high standing women is to get married to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And slow sort of trying to convince her that, like, hey, maybe having a kid would be great. Maybe getting married would be great. You could marry this fucking weird Lannister twin. How about that? Wouldn't that be lovely? This guy who comes up and is immediately a fucking weirdo? That'd be sick.
But he's rich, so, you know, that'd be good. Like, you have to agree that would be good.
And I love the arc that we're going to go on over this episode of her dad slowly realizing, like, yeah, actually, fuck that. That's fucking, that is stupid.
Yeah. I think it's happened a few times with Viserys where he's like, by the end, he's like, God, that is a stupid thing.
Yeah.
And specifically, I'm a hypocrite about it because I've done the thing that didn't follow those rules.
Right.
So how could I possibly, expect that of my daughter? But yeah, so we meet Lord Jason Lannister. He's very Lannister-y. He's a bit more likable, I feel like, than some of the Lannisters. You know, like he's overbearing, but he doesn't seem to be like a murderer or anything. Like, he's not a sociopath.
No, and there's not as much of that. Like, all of the court, the hierarchy here is pretty established. So I think there's not quite as much of the vicious tension as there was between especially the Starks and the Lannisters and in the previous series. So,
true.
But it's really well cast, and everyone's doing a great job of really making it seem like these people are ancestors of the other people we knew. I'm completely buying that this guy at some point turned into Charles Dance. Or not turned into, but I know how children work, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. He aged into him. He grew 100 years and became Charles Dance.
That's, I think, what happens with, that's what they mean by children is you, it's like Pokemon. Except sometimes you go backwards.
I totally agree with all the Targaryens that we've seen. Like, they 100% track to. Is his name Viserys in Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
The brother. Yeah,
he's Viserys as well. So,
and Daenerys. Yeah, like it's really well done. The casting in this is fantastic, and not just the looks but the performances, except for maybe Matt Smith's voice. You are right.
Yeah, it's very good. So we see Thingo, new Lannister, Jason Lannister. genuinely, I had to stop my tongue from automatically saying Derulo then. I had to genuinely actively work in my frontal lobe to not, after saying Jason, say the word Derulo. So Jason Lannister is...
there you go.
Is kind of hungrily staring at fucking Thingo at
Rhaenyra. As we learn, because he's been told that he probably can propose marriage to her by her dad.
And her dad is looking over her shoulder at this, because first we see her walk in and have this little scene with all the fucking gossips over behind the curtains. Yes. Before her and Jason talk, we're getting this little gossip thing with the woman who's like holding her pug vertically. And
yeah, using him as like a dustbuster on the plate.
Like shoving her finger in its eye. Like they've got enough fucking problems. But so, and he's got the most ridiculous like plastic metal collar. I really focused in on the pug during this scene. And there's some other guy here who's like sort of like his foot's a bit hurt and he's kind of sitting with him. I'm not quite sure who he was.
He was a member of a family that we've heard before. I can't remember which one. It was definitely a family from Game of Thrones.
Right.
It doesn't say in this recap. That's annoying. But he's definitely someone that we've seen before.
And they're
probably
all
that we've heard mentioned before.
Yeah.
Because he is like, he has the lame foot. It would have come up at some point. He sits in with the girls. The girls are talking about... Honestly, they're talking about politics. They're not just gossiping. They're talking stepstones. They're talking about going and intervening and, they asked Rihanna. Yeah, they asked Rihanna her opinion.
Yes. And she doesn't really care to render. She's just immediately not impressed by these people. Walks outside and is not impressed by Jason, who puts on this, like, I think quite entitled show of like, well, of course, if I suggest marriage to her, she'll be blown away with my fucking probably gross tasting wine.
Yeah, that was a shame. It's like, if that's the best wine in the land, but no, I guess he's just arrogant. But, you know, he's like, hey, Casterly Rock, it's beautiful. It'd be too much of a step down, you know? Like, it'd be kind of nice for when you're no longer the heir and you're married off to me. And that's what's going to happen. So...
And she doesn't take it particularly well, you know, sniffs a rat and goes inside and talks to that rat, which is her dad. She's like, what are you fucking skittering around here, ratting me out for?
Yeah.
Telling everyone I'm not married. None of their business. And they have like this quite loud argument in front of the most volatile group of people you could have a regal conflict in front of.
Yeah. Yeah,
but
all the gossips and everyone else and all of your relatives, and they're there for your brother's birthday and you've really blown this up.
But they're at this shitty breaking point and you can understand why.
Right, right. Yeah, 100% inappropriate, but both of them are angry at each other. Like, Viserys flies off the handle quite quickly.
Right.
Very, very unkingly of him, and is just like, you just got to get married at some point, so fucking deal with it, all right? And she deals with that by running away.
And it's... The time jump is dealt with really well, where you can feel that they've been having these arguments for 3 years now.
Yes.
And it's gotten to this point where she can't fucking bother with it anymore and he can't be doing with it. Like, she is... I understand both of their positions too. Like, things change and realistically people are going to expect the male to do it, but she's like, well, fucking you told me that I could do it. So what is the point of any of my life if...
Right.
I'm not doing this and I'm just being traded like a piece of goddamn beef jerky.
Which
is currency.
Is an assumption.
Here.
Which is a currency there. But this is an assumption from her. This is something that you know, persists through the whole episode until the very end. She is assuming that being married off means share. She's being used as a bargaining chip or a more like a chess piece in the power play of politics. And that means that she will be giving up her claim to the throne, because we've got a little son here and literally every guy around her and around the king are like, so you bloody, when are you naming your son as heir? It's got to be soon, right? You know, he's going to be more than 2 years old.
And she's probably right, but you're right that it isn't like a done thing, but it probably is what will happen. And she's probably seen it happen to so many people. She spoke last week, which was 3 years ago, to a woman who told her that's all that can happen for you and all that ever will happen and da da da. So, you know, it makes sense that she... But also her dad, I don't think, is completely using her as a pawn, because out of all the people we've seen be king in this show, he's the most human being out of all of them, I think. Like,
100%. I think that he believes what he's saying. And as has the show has proven, he's really good at this and he's not naive. And he's not going to be proven wrong by, you know, society.
But as time goes on in this episode, I feel like we see her disillusionment creep into him realizing, hey, shit, maybe I'm a little disillusioned here.
Yeah.
What is this? A leaving a Penn and Teller show? Because I'm disillusioning. I'm becoming disillusioned. I'm seeing fewer illusions here.
What am I?
Because I'm walking out of her.
What am I, Ali G, doing a magic show? Disillusion.
Yeah. What?
Disillusion.
Yeah. What am I? Another one. She rides off on a horse and is chased by Core.
Kristen Cole, her bodyguard.
Corey Cole.
Corey, yeah.
He looks like a Corey to me. Kristen Cole rides off after and they have a little chat by a pond and, you know, he's all right.
Yeah, yeah, he's good. He's trying to balance out her being a little passionate.
I lost being able to hear you for a second there. Say something again.
I wondered why you stopped talking. he tempers her passion, you know. She's right, but he just calms her down a little bit. Right. But then they're just lost in the woods now.
Lovely looking woods. I'd love to have a walk around in these woods, camp by a little fire. They have a nice old time, and they're wandering about in the woods, kind of having a chat and talking about their backstories. And they don't call it their backstory. They call it their life, but it's backstory.
It's backstory. It's background information.
And, he thanks her for bringing him into all this and says, hey, you're pretty lucky, though. And she's like, well, a lot of people don't know how hard it is. And he's like, yeah, well, fucking, it's harder, but whatever.
Yeah.
It's not particularly hard to hunt if you're the king, though, because he goes out and has a look in the woods where they tell him, like, yeah, we found this, like, crazy deer thing. It's like a white one, a stag. We're going to get it for you. And they spend the next... There's so many dogs and so many people, and they spend, like, a full day, it seems like, looking for this thing before they catch it in the morning. So there's a really big fucking production going on around this hunt. Including Jason Derulo's little spear that he's had made for the king. A smarmy little gift, if ever I've seen one. A smug little present.
It looks cool. Cool spear. Little red tuft on it.
Yeah.
Like tassel-y thing. But again, it's like... It's the spear that he stabs the deer with when the... It's the bullfighting spear of the show.
Right. Like,
The animal has no chance.
Exactly, and it does kind of symbolize that, like, same pointless impotence that a fucking bullfighter has, where it's like, what is the point of you? This bull was dead from the start.
Right.
And
this is just for show. This is just for show that no one seems to see through. It's part of that society.
Right. And it really seems to get to him, or at least Jason does, because they have quite a tense conversation now that I really liked. I think this, Thingo, what's his name, the actor who's playing Viserys again?
That's Paddy Considine.
He's great. And he's getting a little bit drunker throughout the day, and, this is where Jason tells her, hey, her loss in station, if I marry your daughter, wouldn't be that big of a deal. And he starts coming back at him with, like, what are you fucking talking about? And he's like, I'm just saying, if you married it into the Lannister house, you know, we could provide a bit of strength. He's like, you think we need fucking strength? You think we need your muscles? I got Razzle and Dazzle right here. I could beat you dead to the ground right now.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, well, you know, because she won't be the heir to the throne anymore. Viserys is like, well, no one fucking said that. Who said that? Yeah. They didn't tell me.
If you hear cunts talking treason, you got to tell me about it.
That's right. Your men have been gossiping. Are they rebelling? Well, you got to tell me that. It's like, no.
You heard a ligma? No, tell me, Jason, have you heard a ligma? Ligma balls. Yeah, that's right. I'm the king.
I got to introduce you to ligma and sugma.
Fucking asshole, stupid Lannister says what? Huh? It's a great dialogue.
It's fantastic, yeah. It's funny that is like one of the very few times that Viserys has ever stood up for anyone, but he does, and he makes it known to Jason that Rhaenyra, as far as anyone should be concerned, is still the heir to the throne.
And he looks real classic Targaryen-y doing it as well, like old-fashioned.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I guess new-fashioned in the future, but yeah, it's good. Because he got this shitty gift. And you wouldn't get a reaction like that if you'd given someone a good gift. Something like the gifts available if you were to go to manscaped.com.
That's right. They don't have golden blades or tassels, but they do have a protective little shield. They're waterproof, and they do the job perfectly. We are sponsored, once again, by Manscaped. Their performance package has recently been updated. I believe it's the Platinum package now. You can go to their website and get the Platinum package. It includes the Lawnmower 4.0, which is the best electric razor that's ever been invented. You get the Weed Whacker, which is your ear and nose trimmer, something that I use once a month, and that's all I have to use it. Don't have to use it every day or anything like that. It's fantastic. They do like a deodorant, a cologne, a balm, a wonderful travel bag. That's the Platinum package. Give it a look on manscaped.com. It's a fantastic gift. We're getting up to gift-giving season. It comes around two or three times every year.
Yeah.
And the Platinum package is a fantastic gift. Really well presented. It's very... it feels very upmarket, but it's very affordable. We both recommend that. We both used it for a couple of years now.
Yeah, it becomes, Manscaped becomes even more affordable as well. If you go to the website when you buy it, you use the code ARIA, I think.
Yeah.
And that gives you 20% off and free shipping.
ARIA. That's right. Manscaped.com. Use the code ARIA. Free shipping, 20% off. Get it for the man in your life or yourself or anyone.
Anybody. Anybody can use this. You don't have to be a man. But if you're made to feel like less of a man, like this king is, you may take to drinking and really, really get into it over the course of the night.
And God, he really does. I think it's as much the conflict, right, as the, you know, it's his internal conflict. He's not dealing with it well.
It's him and his daughter. It'd drive any king to drink.
Sure.
You gotta, and also he's getting all this fucking vulturing happening again now. So everyone starts coming up, leaning into his ear, telling him who he should be marrying Rihanna off to. And it's, I get the impression during this bit too, there's a few times. So like different people are suggesting, I think Otto suggests, the other kid, right? Is that right? Oh no, he suggests the baby.
The brother. Yeah, the brother. Oh, the bait. Yeah, yeah.
To take a sister wife.
Exactly, yes. That's awful. It doesn't seem to fully put off Viserys, though. It must have happened before. Like, it is a pretty stereotypical thing to have happened in both real history and Game of Thrones history. But it's fucked up. Like, she's now 17. This is her two-year-old half-brother. It sure keeps it in the family. Targaryen strong, but... that is bad, in my opinion.
Yeah, and Viserys doesn't seem to like it particularly much either. I also get the impression more and more during this episode, it could be that he's looking at the baby with this face because of the idea, but I get the impression that he's not super fucking into this kid.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a few little bits and pieces where I just got the feeling that he doesn't give a shit about Aegon.
No, that's a good point. I never felt that he overly did care. I guess I just didn't notice that, but you're right. There's not a lot of positivity from him towards Aegon.
No, because there were...
He appreciates Alicent. He appears to appreciate that union.
Yeah.
Maybe politically, and as it becomes clear, and you know, was probably clear at the time, just because they get along.
Right.
You know, as opposed to her being that 12-year-old or just someone else that he doesn't actually, you know, doesn't like to hang out with.
And somebody can maybe talk to about stuff like... I mean, she does talk to him about politics and stuff later, but this is where he's like, stop fucking talking to me about politics, please. Let me just sit and drink way too much for once.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think he just is... There's a time and a place for it, and everyone's always fucking in his ear and niggling because, like, he is susceptible to it. So I understand why they're picking at him, because there's meat to pick off the bones, but, you know, it is tiring for him. But then this other guy... who was either the Master of Coin or Laws or whichever one he was, one of those council members.
I figured that out. He is Lionel Strong. He's the Master of Laws.
Right.
So the guy at the start was Lyman Beesbury, Master of Coin.
Right. So Lionel Strong and Lyman Beesbury are the Master of Laws and Coin, respectively.
That's right.
I'll remember that.
The sneaky looking one from the start is called Lie Man.
Lie Man Beesberry. So,
yeah. And this stout guy is called Lionel Strong.
Okay. Well, so, yeah. Lionel's up here suggesting another one, and he suggests maybe the other Valerian one. Their surname isn't Valerian, is it? Or is it?
It's Valerian.
Motherfuckers.
Yeah, it's so close. And they apparently both have, like, the special old Valerian blood. That's why they keep telling them to marry Targaryen to Valerian.
Right.
So it is confusing, but yeah, it is slightly different.
Well, the Valerians have another child.
Yeah, I believe it's the son, right? It's the son of Corlys.
Yeah.
It's the older brother of the young girl we saw last week. We see him at the battle later on.
We do. So he gives him a little pat on the back and is sort of like, hey, that's not a bad idea. We get a little bit of a campfire scene where, you know, the two, Rihanna and Hagard, chat a little bit more. A boar comes after them. They fight the boar off. All's well.
She has a real outlet, a real venting of frustration, stabbing that boar to fuck and gets covered in blood.
And hey, at the start of Game of Thrones, I don't know if it was in the third episode, but a boar kills the king. This time, she kills the boar.
She killed the boar.
Whatever could it mean?
I don't know.
It means she got that bacon. But then we get a little bit of a fireside chat with Alicent and Viserys.
Right.
And he really is just, you know, sharing and open with her. And he does seem to, partly because she's finagled her way in there and, you know, somewhat manipulatively made sure that she's a shoulder to cry on.
Yep.
But he's telling her all about, you know, I had this fucking vision and I thought it was Baelor, but now I'm thinking I was just being fucking stupid and it was just a dream and I've never been able to recapture it. So could it mean anything? And
right. And, you know, yeah, putting Rhaenyra in that position, you know, as the heir, I thought that would be like the salve for my grief, that would fix things. But it turns out that, you know, you do need to actually grieve and process your emotions. You can't just fix them by, you know, putting one action into place.
Right. And he's feeling kind of just like he doesn't quite know what he's doing, right? It sounds like he doesn't know what the right direction to go in and feels a little bit trapped and powerless, and then has this like fucking humiliating experience out in the forest of having to kill this this poor, what is it, a deer?
It's a stag because it has those big old antlers.
Yeah,
it's,
right.
It's a male deer. It's not the white one. It's not the king of the forest.
No. They're like, we couldn't find the one we were telling you about for a day, but we got this other fucking random one.
Yeah, yeah. So you could kill that one in front of everyone.
And it's just like so wet and weak and bad. And it just, and you can see that, I mean, A, he's hungover, but B, it seems like he thinks this is fucking stupid too. And not exactly what he wanted.
It's a stupid tradition and it's unpleasant. He doesn't want to take this animal's life. He's not a killer. You know, that's not what I get from Viserys.
And it's just that I think it's this also, this letdown of like what was promised and told and foretold, like in his dream, comes out and it's this fucking regular ass stag who's just standing there being like, hey, I'm a dime a dozen. It's like, well, you're talking stag. That's pretty cool, but you are a dime a dozen still.
Yeah.
But then this.
No, that's a good point.
This queen.
The whole event is underwhelming.
Right, exactly. Like he didn't really do it. But then this future queen is up on this hill looking over everything. Yeah. Blood in her hair. She's, you know, been kind of baptized in this blood now.
And she took very easily to killing that animal.
And she did it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I guess Thingo did it a little bit, Corey. But
Well, she was aided by one guard. Viserys was aided by 20.
Yeah.
She was into it. He was not. It was a transformative moment for her, it feels like. For him, it was just uncomfortable. Yeah, total contrast.
Totally. And then here's the white stag, big sort of knowing look, a little nod of approval, a little thumbs up and a wink.
I believe it was a little game recognized game, if you will.
The literal game.
Literal game.
So, he that I mean, they couldn't. It feels like I've been. The back of my head hurts from how hard I've been bludgeoned with this, but it still works. Yep. It's still nice.
Yep. Yeah. No, you're right. It does feel like a little bit tropey, but also they're using that to convey something very quickly, and you know,
and
that's good.
They're talking in the episode about, like, you know, it's signs from the gods and whatever. And we know that stuff is kind of real in this world. So it didn't ring as phony or anything to me. It just it worked.
Yeah, for sure.
Because then, yeah, she comes back to camp with a big boar dragging behind this little baby. I know it's a baby, but just not looking like it's going to be the king. The baby's always fussing and mussing around. It's the baby. If that baby was going to be king, it'd be sitting there quietly. It'd be reading a little book.
Mm-hmm.
But this baby's
they do
a
say
loser.
That at the start. I feel like that's what bloody Lyman says at the start is like, you know, it's wonderful to see our young king come of age, and like the other one is like, he's bloody throwing food everywhere. What are you talking about?
Yeah. It really seems like this kid's like just a average kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
But everyone heads back from the name day stuff, and Otto and his daughter get to have a little chat here. Again, just like, I don't know what it is, if it's just that he's her father or how much of this ambition is hers, but the sort of, I can't figure out how much either of them is into these plans. Otto obviously is, but like, it's hard to quite tell how under his thumb Alicent is. Do you see what I mean?
Right. Yeah, for sure. Because it's like, yeah, like materially, she benefits from all these plans coming to fruition, but she feels morally conflicted about them. So,
right.
I mean, she feels she's probably morally 100% against them. She never would have put herself in this position. She was happy just being a highborn lady who was friends with the queen or the princess.
Yeah.
And
this is kind of what Otto's.
I don't know necessarily what Otto's like end game is, though, if he's not already there.
Because it seems like it's a Lannistery thing of just like, hey, even if it's a different name, if we've got our kid on the throne, then that's pretty sick.
Then I guess my life was worth it, you know.
Exactly.
Tick that off. I did this.
Exactly.
I guess so, yeah.
Legacy bullshit. Because like,
right.
That's what he's kind of talking about Alicent, talking to Alicent about here is like, you got to make sure that this kid, your kid, ends up on the throne. Wouldn't you want that? And she's like, kind of just like, yeah, well, mother wouldn't. And he's really driving home, like, maybe you should fucking try and get Rhaenyra to back off a little bit. How about that?
Yeah.
And she doesn't seem to think that that's necessarily, I don't know. She doesn't seem particularly sold on the ambition, but then also is doing all of it. So, man. And then goes to Viserys's chambers here, I guess hers as well, because they're married, and they have a little chat, and they're having a, you know, pretty casual husband and wife sort of thing. They're recapping and chatting, and then she kind of starts saying some stuff. I can't remember exactly what it is. I'm looking for the exact dialogue here, but
they get the letter. Like, he's got that letter from Corlys's brother being like, hey, please send some help. The war's going badly. We said it at the start of the episode. We're saying again, come on, you've got to help. And Viserys is like, no, I don't want to.
Yeah.
She doesn't like, I love how they do set up these sort of scenes with her and her father, or you know, there are other instances of other characters where they'll have a chat about needing to do some manipulating and make some chess moves.
Yeah.
And then the next scene is not actually that literally going into action, but it is more, it is them continuing to sort of work themselves into a position of being trusted or being giving, you know, valuable advice, which is what this scene is.
That's the thing, because she doesn't seem that invested in like, when she's talking to her dad about it, she seems to think that, like, why are we doing this? This is stupid. I just want my kid. You know, like, doesn't seem as ambitious. But then she's talking to the king, and she's like, well, maybe you could do this. And he's like, no. Yeah. And she's like, well, maybe you could do this. Like, she just kind of frames it a different way. She says something about, like, you know, would it be better to be seen to be, you know, would it be better to let the crab feeder win and have him get stronger, or have people who are closer to being our allies be stronger. And
right. It's like, okay, yeah, logically, take away the backstabbing and the politicking, and like, what's better for you as the king of this realm?
Yeah.
Or to make the realm stronger? Yeah, it's a fucking no-brainer, isn't it, Viserys?
So it's just interesting seeing her, like, seem to not be into it, and then the second that she's doing it, it's like, oh, but you're good at this.
I mean, I wonder if, yeah, it's like, this is something that she believes in as well. Like,
right.
You're right, she doesn't, like, what more, she's probably, you know, what more do you need? Old bloody Otto, like, I'm the queen.
Yeah.
I'm pregnant with a second child from the king.
But not if Rhaenyra takes the throne here.
Yeah.
Then it's all naught.
But she's like, yeah, I want the whole, you know, kingdom to be stable. That feels like a thing that a queen should want. So I'm going to push my king in the right direction. And she totally does.
Yeah. And so then Rhaenyra and Viserys kind of lay it all out here in the main room. The control room here.
Yep, the bridge.
And she's just telling him, like, yeah, what's the point of me? You're trying to marry me off because I'm useless now. And this is where he kind of apologizes to her and, you know, says, hey, look, I had to do all this shit that I didn't want to do too. I've had to do a whole bunch of duty bullshit. But he seems to see her point and be saying to her, like, yeah, I've never said that this guy will be replacing you. This guy being my son.
Yeah.
This fucking guy.
My two-year-old son.
This baby.
Yeah. Yeah. This little fucking baby.
But they seem to regain some ground with each other here.
Totally. And I think, yeah, this is where he sort of admits, like, yeah, you know, like, I could have made more politically savvy choices with my bride that I had to take after your mum died. But I didn't. I chose someone that, you know, fit the bill, but I also happen to enjoy the company of. So, you know, you can choose your own husband. Just don't make it Sir Criston Cole, because he's not a highborn lord. Would really kind of fuck things up politically. It would almost, like, give away any power you had just because the guy's kind of hot and seems like a nice guy. So just don't do that. But, you know, otherwise, choose your own match.
Yeah, and to be fair, not kinda, but, like...
sure.
He flat out says to her at the end of this, like, hey, look, I was back and forthy on it for a little bit, but guess what?
Yes.
You're right. I said it would be you, and I think it should be you. Strap your boots on, because you're going to be queen.
Yeah.
Like, tells her, I could see him going back on that at some point, because it does seem like he says it quite emotionally.
We've all already made our predictions that he's going to die probably by the end of this season. If he's out of the picture, then... I mean, it does... If he dies before another heir is named, then it will automatically go to Rhaenyra, but that is obviously a complication that could arise
sooner
rather than later.
Kind of brings back up when she's talking to her dad that, like, remember we all fucking swore loyalty to Rhaenyra, like... It feels as though we're kind of plotting against someone if we're trying to get this other kid to be king.
Yes.
But either way, and not to time jump ourselves into the future, but there will be more time jumps, because I did see something about, like, oh, there's going to be different actors playing these characters as the series goes on, because they're going to age.
Yes.
So how about that?
Interesting, right? It does, like, it makes sense. This the source material is more of like an overarching history rather than a story. So... I guess we'll be jumping around in time and getting to some big sort of crucial events.
Like The Crown. Olivia Colman's going to be one of them, the dragon. So we go back up for this last part of the episode to the crab feeder battle up somewhere north. We see this other son who they've been mentioning, who would be a potential husband for Rhaenyra. We see the other Velaryon lads... hanging around, two brothers, just broing down on the battlefield. Nothing
That's
more
right.
that I like than busted swords and bros. Couple
just
of
giving
beers,
each other noogies.
Couple of big wounds. And they're arguing.
But yeah, they're in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they're really not in a good place. The crab feeder and his men keep hiding in the caves. it's too hard to attack. That's a bottleneck. They just keep getting, you know, men killed. The dragons can't go into the caves. They're losing the battle.
Guerrilla warfare, baby. It works. Doesn't matter how many big dragons you've got if you can't get to the people you would dragon. So yeah, all these like dejected looking soldiers are kind of standing around as these guys are arguing that Daemon shows up and again kind of causes tension and a fuss wherever he goes.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly by the fact that a guy who King Viserys sent off in the last scene to give him a letter saying that they were going to help delivers that letter and gets beaten with his helmet immediately.
Yep.
Pretty cool of him to do.
Really good stuff. Yeah, I love it when someone flies off the handle.
There's that phrase, always shoot the messenger.
Yeah.
I truly believe in that.
An ancient Greek phrase, yes. So he's pissed off by this. He feels affronted. He feels disrespected and emasculated, which is, you know, a shame because his brother was reaching out to him with genuine support and love, and it makes him angry, which I think is unhealthy.
It is unhealthy, but it is understandable as well.
It is also understandable, yes.
So what is not understandable... is the action that he decides to take where I assume, you know, he storms off after beating this guy with a helmet and the way it's shot sort of implies that he immediately gets on a boat and goes over there and is just like doing his own little plan. But it seems as though there must have been some period of time where he cooled off, walked back to the table and said, sorry for flying off the handle there, boys. I'm willing to bro down as well. What if I go and pretend to surrender for no reason, but then chop some people instead of surrendering. But then instead of right then you attacking, you wait a little extra bit until it's the last second before I'll die. And then you guys attack in a formation that suggests we plan this ahead of time.
Had to have been planned ahead of time. Hugely. Like a day ahead of time. Because they all have moved into position for a massive ambush. Yeah, no, that it's... I mean, you can say, like, it's just a TV trick. You know, it is meant to be a surprise that they've made it look like it's one long continuous timeline, but it isn't. I mean, I think it was, like I said, I think at the start, it was just a bit of, you know, a bit of gamesmanship, a bit of, you know, like, razzle-dazzle. I think he just wanted it to be cool. And I mean, the thing that they say throughout is that they need to lure them out of the cave.
Right. And that
and they also, like, yeah, before he even comes back to meet up with the bros, they are saying, like, look, what if we just have some bait, like Daemon? And then it's like, yeah, that's exactly the plan.
That is, yeah, you're right. That is what happens. They do say have some bait, but just like... The specific way in which this bait is filmed just took me out of it for some reason. I'm maybe being a little bit pedantic or whatever, a little picky like a crab, but like
I think it was just it was a bit TV-y.
It's the last second swoop in that always fucks me up. Whatever they do, that last moment, here comes the big swoop in, that just bothers me every single time because it's like just
it's an unnecessary risk.
Never, ever, ever do that.
Yes, yeah. You wouldn't, that's right. If it was a real military maneuver, you'd never do that because it's a stupid risk to take.
And it just means you're late. Unless that dragon just showed up really late, but on the... Yeah, the bomb would never be defused with like 0.01 seconds to go, or else that's the worst fucking bomb diffuser in the world. If they put you in that much risk, the second that bomb diffuser got home, they'd be like, Keanu fucking Reeves. You drive a bus that quickly, I understand it. The bomb is rigged up. But in the elevator, nothing was wrong. You could have just done it. You're a trained bomb diffuser.
Yeah.
I feel like a bloody bomb about to go off now, Keanu. For goodness
God, I wish
sake.
I could diffuse this situation quicker, but it'll probably have to wait until the last minute before you really you go off.
Unless you have a reason for me not to, I'm going to fire you in 3, 2, 1. I'm very good at it, actually. Okay.
No, that's completely fair. It didn't take me out of it, but it was more one of the less gritty and realistic aspects of this episode, which has dealt with stuff like genuine emotional turmoil very maturely. For it to be a little immature at this point,
and it's nice looking and stuff too. Yeah, it's not a big deal. I just thought it was kind of funny that it, like, you know. I just think it's kind of funny how you would wait until the last
second. I thought it was
kind
of random, honestly. But and then he still has to go into the cave to get the crab feeder. And boy, does he get him. He comes out and he's cut him in half. His entrails are everywhere. Just like, I was going to say Daenerys, but just like Rihanna dragging the boar back into camp, Daemon drags the crab. Yeah.
And they keep saying all the time how much the two are like each other. There's a couple of people in this episode who are like, why do you got to take after your uncle?
Yes. Oh, yeah. And there's even just a lot of implied. That scene with the gossiping stuff was like, oh, your bloody uncle. Have you spoken to him about his military maneuvers down on the stepstones? And she's like, no, I don't. We're not friends anymore. But everyone, yeah, obviously links them quite closely. Just like Daemon wishes he could.
Yeah. But so after 3 years of fighting in the stepstones, they finally had the idea of what if we brought them out of the cave somehow? Good for them. Well done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Congratulations to the Terminator, Matt Smith.
Yep.
He was the Terminator at one point. Or I think he played Skynet, actually.
Oh, right. Okay. In the movie with Daenerys?
I think in the movie with Daenerys.
Right. Yeah. That keeps coming up on Binge. Terminator Genesis, and I am so close to going in. I just want to see how bad it is.
The problem with it isn't even that it's bad, it's that it's just so lower medium that it's like, that type of thing. But yeah, nice look and special effects all throughout, I thought.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
Up there with as good as any battles looked in Game of Thrones.
Mm.
It is a shame that the creepy crab feeder never got to say anything or do anything, then he's just chopped up
now. I know. It was never even like, I mean, it's confirmed now, but it still didn't feel like he was the leader of this army. Like, this guy felt, you know, maybe because he didn't talk much, but he wasn't particularly imposing, just felt like a soldier. But, you know, I guess this was never meant to be the big enemy
just
of
a bandit
the season.
Guy, I guess. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, the only real note that I made on this episode that we haven't covered was that I don't think that crabs can eat people.
Oh.
Like, how would a crab eat a whole, like, I chunk guess out of a person?
They're like rotting flesh is what they were picking at a lot of, which I suppose would be easier to get to.
I guess.
Maybe these are like
maybe
Westeros crabs.
Yeah, they could be special Westeros crabs with big teeth. Yeah.
Mm.
I didn't find it a very threatening thing.
No.
Threatening gimmick.
The crab is the silliest animal. It's like one of those like J-tier X-Men where he's like, I'm the crab guy.
Yeah.
Watch out. I can run quickly, but only sideways.
That's right.
If you trap me in like a very long but low width box, I'm done.
I'm done for. Don't shake hands with me, though.
Yeah, I'll snip you up.
I'll give you a snipping snip like nobody's business.
What do you mean I'm worse than even Gambit?
So they do a bit of a Deus Ex Machina plot at the end. Crabfeed is dead. But the other thing to sort of address is that the Daemon specifically doesn't wait for any help. He basically spits in the face of Viserys and says, you know what? You offering help has motivated me enough to think of a stupid plan to finish this myself. I'm not going to allow this battle to be won by you. I am going to win the battle. And he does.
Sure.
And he does it as a fuck you to his brother as much as anything.
That's true. That's a good point. That does seem to motivate him a lot, being able to do a brotherly fuck you.
Yeah.
He'd have seen those other brothers hanging out. Been like, you two standing at opposite ends of a table. You guys are fucking cute. I'd never do it.
Yeah.
I'd never do it. Okay, episode. I'm interested to see what the next time jump in is as well. Kind of knowing that, like, you know, we're going to be doing time jumps a bunch now, seeing it happen between these episodes. And then I hope no one considers it to be a spoiler that there'll be different actors playing all, you know, these characters and stuff.
I feel like everyone other than you and I have been looking into all of this stuff a lot more.
Right.
I feel like people have been, because I think like we are real purists about the TV, you know, experience. We just want to consume the text, not any of the, you know, the other stuff. I'm not watching any of the next time on trailers.
No.
Haven't read the book or anything.
None of that.
So I feel like other people are a bit more tapped in than us even, so...
I feel a little bit reassured as well that no one will mind me saying that as well, because a ladybug has flown in my window, which surely is the white stag of podcasting and means that everything's going to be okay.
It is. I think ladybug is a good luck.
Surely, right? You say ladybug too quick, it sounds like luck. Ladybug, luck.
Ladybug.
Not really, I suppose.
But that is a nice omen for us, at least. Curious to see how soon Viserys' downfall comes, because, man, he's really putting himself in the position of making a lot of decisions that could bite him on the ass and set up conflicts that, yeah, specifically end up with him being the one who is at fault, who is the one who can be taken out to create a vacuum of power. I agree. Paddy Considine is doing a fantastic job as this guy who means well, but is probably not actually equipped to be a king.
Everybody is, I think. Yeah, they're like I've really thought there hasn't been. I think Matt Smith has the most focus on him because he's the most well-known, probably, actor out of anyone on the show. So I've seen the most sort of discussion about whether he's any good or not, and I suppose I've had the most like. He just sticks out because I already knew him. So, like, you're a little more analytical of what someone's doing, I suppose. Yep. But I think he's doing just fine.
Totally. Like you said before, I think the performance of the actor playing Alicent is really good. It's quite subtle. You can really read her predicament on her face. Right. And I think it's a shame that we're going to say goodbye at some point to Millie Alcock, who's been playing Rhaenyra, because she's been a great Rhaenyra.
Yeah. But,
everybody
dies.
Yeah, that's why they changed actors.
Oh no, that ladybug's just burst into flames.
That's even better omen. That's great. True. That's fantastic.
Fire created life. Well, thanks for watching this episode and listening to us, I suppose, everybody.
Yeah. Any thoughts, any ideas? Any speculation, send them through areyoutalkingtomepod@gmail.com or areyoutalkingtome on Facebook or Instagram. We'll see you next week. Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.